I want you to imagine just for a second that your brain is this really dense ancient forest.
Okay.
And as you walk through this forest every single day, you take the exact same paths.
Right, the familiar routes.
Exactly. And over years, over decades even, those paths become so deeply rutted and like overgrown with thick, thorny brush on the sides that it becomes virtually impossible to just step off of them and walk a new route.
You're just stuck.
Yeah, you are literally stuck in the grooves of your own mind. But now, what if a massive storm rolled through and instead of destroying the forest, it somehow caused thousands of new, flexible, totally clear pathways to just, sprout directly from the ground?
That would be wild.
And what if that entire topographical transformation happened in just 24 hours?
I mean, it sounds like pure science fiction, honestly, or like some sort of biological magic trick.
Right. But in reality, it is the absolute cutting edge of modern neuroscience.
It really is.
So we are taking a deep dive today into this absolutely fascinating article from the OOTW Journal. It's titled Psilocybin and Neuroplasticity: How a Single Dose Rewires the Brain.
That's a great piece.
And the mission of this deep dive is to explore how a recent, just massive explosion in neuroscience is completely dismantling the old chemical imbalance model of psychiatry.
Yeah, it's replacing it with something far more profound, which is actual structural architecture.
Okay, let's unpack this, because for decades we've treated mental health like we just needed to, I don't know, top up the fluids in a car engine.
That's a really good way to put it.
Like, the assumption was always that if you feel bad, you just need to add a little serotonin here, maybe balance some dopamine over there, and the intent will run fine.
Right.
But the sources we are looking at today, they reveal that we actually have the biological ability to rebuild the physical engine itself.
Which is just a massive paradigm shift. What's so fascinating here is how fundamentally this reframes our entire understanding of what mental illness actually is. Because to really appreciate how revolutionary this new science is, we have to look at what traditional psychiatry has been getting wrong about the depressed or the traumatized brain for, well, the last half century.
Getting wrong how exactly?
Well, the dominant paradigm viewed mental illness almost exclusively as a chemical deficit.
Right.
The logic was incredibly straightforward. Like, if you're experiencing severe depression, your brain must not be producing enough serotonin.
Or if you have chronic anxiety, your GABA levels are just messed up.
Exactly. And we've all totally absorbed that cultural
Oh,
narrative.
absolutely. I mean, it's the reason the treatment protocol for the last 50 years has just been pharmacological maintenance.
Taking a daily pill.
Yeah, you take a pill every single day to artificially prop up those chemical levels. And the hope is just that as long as you keep taking it, the invisible chemical storm in your head stays calm.
Right. But the OOTW Journal article points out that this model entirely misses the physical reality of what is actually happening inside the brain.
The actual structure of it.
Exactly. Conditions like major depression, PTSD, OCD, severe addiction, they aren't just chemical imbalances floating in an otherwise healthy structure.
They're not.
No, they actually involve profound physical atrophy.
Physical atrophy, like the brain is shrinking.
Literally, yes. Chronic stress and trauma physically change the shape of the brain. Prolonged exposure to stress hormones, like cortisol, literally shrinks the hippocampus.
And that's the part vital for memory and learning, right?
Yes. And it also reduces what's called dendritic branching in the prefrontal cortex.
Okay, let's visualize that for a second for everyone listening. Dendrites are the branching extensions of neurons,
Yeah.
right? They reach out and receive signals from other neurons.
That's right.
So they basically look like the branches of a tree.
Exactly like a tree. And when a person is subjected to chronic trauma or intractable depression, those branches literally wither and retreat. The brain becomes physically less connected. It loses its neuroplasticity.
Which is the brain's ability to adapt, right?
Right. To form new thought patterns, to literally learn its way out of suffering. So the pathology isn't just a low fluid level in the engine.
It's architectural collapse.
Exactly. The brain is physically shrinking away from its own connections.
Man, that is incredibly bleak. But I guess that makes this 2021 study by Shao and colleagues at Yale so groundbreaking.
Oh, the Neuron paper.
It's, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Published in the journal Neuron. Because this is the paper that seemed to just flip the table on the whole field.
It really did.
So the Yale researchers used this advanced imaging technique called two-photon microscopy.
Which is amazing technology.
Yeah, like this isn't an MRI where you just see broad blood flow lighting up. This technique uses targeted lasers to look directly through a tiny window into the living brain tissue of mice.
Right, they're watching individual living neurons in real time.
Before and after administering a single dose of psilocybin.
And that is the key. They weren't making assumptions based on behavior. They were observing the physical hardware of the brain.
They measured the density of dendritic spines. Those are the tiny physical protrusions on the dendrites where the actual synapses form.
The exact microscopic spots where neurons actually talk to each other.
Exactly. And the Yale team found that a single dose of psilocybin produced a 10% increase in dendritic spine density in the frontal cortex.
Within 24 hours.
Within 24 hours. And those structural changes persisted for at least a month.
Wait, 10%? I mean, just think about the scale of that.
It's massive.
If you woke up tomorrow and your house suddenly had 10% more load-bearing walls and hallways, that is a massive structural renovation.
Yeah, and this happened overnight.
It's just wild.
Well, and if we connect this to the bigger picture, the frontal cortex governs executive function, emotional regulation, cognitive flexibility.
Right.
So a 10% increase in physical connections in that specific area gives the brain entirely new avenues to process information.
New paths in the forest.
Exactly. The researchers even took mice subjected to chronic stress mice that were exhibiting severe anhedonia and that physical atrophy we just discussed.
The withered branches.
Right. And they found that the single dose of psilocybin completely reversed both the behavioral deficits and the structural damage.
The branches grew back.
The withered branches grew back.
Okay, so what does this all mean for traditional antidepressants, like SSRIs? Are they essentially just putting like a chemical band-aid over a crumbling physical structure?
Well, it's a bit more nuanced. SSRIs do eventually promote some neuroplastic effects.
Okay.
But the mechanism and the timeline are completely different.
Yeah.
Conventional antidepressants work through indirect serotonergic mechanisms.
Indirect.
Yeah. It takes weeks, sometimes months, of daily dosing for the brain to slowly initiate any of those structural changes.
Right, right.
And even then, those architectural effects are relatively modest compared to what we're seeing here.
That perfectly explains the completely frustrating experience so many people have at the doctor's office.
Oh, absolutely.
You get prescribed an antidepressant and you're told to give it, what, 6 to 8 weeks to see if it even takes the edge off?
Yeah, and the traditional drugs are working slowly, often only partially, and they frequently stop working the moment the patient discontinues the medication.
Because the underlying structure is still damaged.
Right. They're just adjusting the chemical environment within a structure that is still heavily compromised.
But psilocybin is different.
Psilocybin bypasses that slow, indirect route. It reverses the atrophy through a rapid, massive regeneration of the architecture itself.
Wow.
And that regeneration continues long after the compound has actually been metabolized and left the body.
So knowing that the brain's physical structure can change by 10% overnight, it begs a massive biological question.
Which is?
What exactly is happening at the cellular level to make these new connections sprout so rapidly? I mean, a compound found in a mushroom shouldn't automatically know how to tell a mammalian brain to grow new hardware.
No, it shouldn't. And to understand the mechanism, the OETW article highlights this landmark 2023 study by Alex Bhattacharya and colleagues.
Published in Nature, right?
Yes. And this study essentially rewrote the pharmacological rulebook for psychedelics.
How so?
Well, for decades, a foundational assumption was that psilocybin did everything through the 5-HT2A serotonin receptor.
That's the one responsible for the trip, right?
Exactly. The classic psychedelic experience. But Bhattacharya's team discovered that psilocybin also directly binds to a completely different receptor called TRKB.
Wait, let me stop you there. I thought the entire defining feature of a psychedelic drug was that it binds to that specific 5-HT2A serotonin receptor.
It is a defining feature, yes.
So what is this TRKB receptor doing in the mix?
Okay, so TRKB is the primary receptor for a protein called BDNF.
BDNF.
Which stands for brain-derived neurotrophic factor. In the neuroscience community, BDNF is really famous for its role in neurogenesis and neuroplasticity.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, because I've read about this. BDNF is basically Miracle-Grow for your mind.
That's a perfect analogy.
So if BDNF is the fertilizer that helps the brain grow, depression is a disease that basically locks the garden gate so the fertilizer can't get in.
Right.
And then psilocybin acts as a master key that directly bypasses the broken lock.
Exactly. In a severely depressed or traumatized brain, upstream signaling failures basically prevent that BDNF fertilizer from doing its job.
It can't get to the garden.
The brain wants to heal, but the signal is blocked. But by directly binding to the TRK receptor, psilocybin mimics BDNF.
It kicks the gate wide open.
It kicks it wide open. And the activation of TRKB then triggers this profound cellular cascade, specifically activating what is known as the MTOR pathway.
The MTOR pathway. That sounds incredibly intense. Like, I don't know, the central power grid of a city or something.
It acts very much like a central grid. The MTOR pathway is a master regulator of cell growth and protein synthesis in the body.
Okay.
So the biological sequence is actually really elegant. Psilocybin activates TRKB.
Which mimics the BDNF fertilizer.
Right. Which then triggers the MTOR pathway.
Right.
And that MTOR pathway acts as, like, the foreman on a construction site.
Oh, I see.
It directly drives the synthesis of synaptic proteins and forces the rapid physical growth of those new dendritic spines we saw in the Yale study.
Okay, I have to ask about cause and effect here, because this sounds almost too neat.
Sure.
How do the researchers know for sure that it's this specific biological cascade, this MTOR foreman building new spines, that's doing the heavy lifting?
Okay, good question.
Like, how do we know it's not just the fact that the mouse had a really profound, mind-altering psychedelic trip that made it less depressed?
Right. And it's the exact same question the researchers had.
Yeah.
So to isolate the biology from the subjective experience, they did something ingenious.
What'd they do?
They gave the mice a drug called rapamycin.
Rapamycin.
Yeah, which specifically blocks the MTOR pathway.
It fires the construction foreman.
Exactly. And when they blocked MTOR and then gave the mice psilocybin, the antidepressant effects completely vanished.
Whoa.
The brain did not heal. But the behavioral signs of the psychedelic experience remained entirely unchanged.
That is wild. So the mice tripped, but they didn't heal at all.
Right. The subjective effects, you know, the head twitches and behavioral markers that indicate a psychedelic state in rodent models, those were fully present.
Right, right.
But without the MTO pathway building new physical connections, the depression and the anhedonia just stayed.
That is undeniable proof, isn't it?
It really is. It provided direct evidence that the therapeutic healing isn't just a psychological reaction to a profound hallucinogenic experience.
Right.
The healing is mechanistically downstream of this very specific neuroplasticity cascade. If you stop the physical scaffolding from being built, the disease remains.
Okay, so the gate is open, the fertilizer is in, and new dendritic spines are physically sprouting.
Yes.
But having new biological connections doesn't automatically equal mental healing, does it?
Not necessarily, no.
Like, a brain full of new physical pathways is completely useless if the neural traffic doesn't know where to go. So how does this cellular construction project translate into actual clinical therapy for a human being?
That gap between biology and psychology brings us to this concept of the plasticity window.
The plasticity window.
Yeah. In 2018, David Olson's lab at UC Davis published a paper in Cell Reports where they coined a new term for this entire class of drugs.
What's the term?
Psychoplastogens.
Psychoplastogens. It literally sounds like the biological molding of the mind.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
They define psychoplastogens as compounds that rapidly promote neural structural change that outlasts the presence of the drug itself by weeks or even months.
So the drug is gone, but the change remains.
Right. Olson's lab demonstrated that this structural change creates a highly specific time-bound window of opportunity.
How long is the window?
Well, imaging shows that the formation of these new dendritic spines is most active 24 to 72 hours after the psilocybin is administered.
Wow.
So the drug is completely out of the patient's system, but the brain is in a state of maximum structural flux.
For roughly 1 to 3 days after the session, your brain is essentially wet clay.
Wet clay is the perfect metaphor. The rigid, hardened neural representations of trauma, grief, or addiction that have been calcified for years are suddenly softened.
They can be changed.
They can be revisited, reprocessed, and rebuilt. And this biological reality beautifully explains a massive puzzle that researchers had been facing in clinical trials.
Which puzzle?
Well, patients who receive intensive integration therapy after their psilocybin session have astronomically better outcomes than people who simply take the drug without any therapeutic context.
Okay, let me push back on this for a second.
Sure.
Wait. If the drug is physically rebuilding the brain's hardware through the TRKB and MTOR pathways like we just established, why do we need the therapy at all? Shouldn't the biology just fix the problem on its own? I mean, if I break my arm and the bone knits back together, I don't need a therapist to tell the bone how to heal. The body just does it.
Well, think back to your road analogy from the beginning.
The forest paths.
Right. Psilocybin builds new roads, but it doesn't give you a map.
Oh.
Psilocybin only provides the structural openness. It creates the biological scaffolding. But the human therapy, the intentional psychological work, that determines what actually gets built on that fresh scaffolding.
Oh, I see. So if you just take a psychoplastogen to make your brain highly plastic, and then you go right back to your exact same toxic environment,
yes,
your exact same stressful job, your exact same negative thought loops, your wet clay brain is just going to wire those brand new connections right back into the exact same depressed architecture.
Precisely. You would simply be paving over the old ruts with new asphalt, but keeping the exact same broken map.
That makes total sense.
The integration therapy is where you train the newly plastic brain to encode healthier experiences.
Better emotional regulation.
Right, and new insights into the fresh physical structure. The biological drug opens the door, but the psychological therapy walks the patient through it and shows them where to live.
Wow. Okay, but if the true healing power of psilocybin lies in this physical rebuilding of the neural scaffolding, you know, the TRKB receptor, the MTOR foramen, and this psychoplastogenic window of wet clay, we have to look at the massive bottleneck in the current treatment model.
Logistics.
Yeah. A clinical psilocybin session takes, what, 6 to 8 hours?
Usually, yes.
And it requires two highly trained therapists in the room the entire time. It is incredibly expensive and resource intensive.
Very much so.
How on earth does modern medicine plan to scale this to the millions of people suffering from severe depression?
Well, that logistical bottleneck is currently driving the most controversial debate in modern psychedelic science.
Which is?
Do you actually need the hallucinogenic trip to get the healing?
Oh, wow.
Remember David Olsey's lab at UC Davis?
The psychoplastogen guys.
Right. They are currently pouring resources into developing non-hallucinogenic psychoplastogen.
And non-hallucinogenic.
Yeah, they are engineering novel molecules designed to trigger the TRKB receptor and the MTOR pathway, promoting all that structural plasticity, but completely stripping out the subjective psychedelic experience.
So they want to distill the entire 8-hour mind-altering journey down to, like, a standard daily pill you pick up at the pharmacy.
Essentially, yes. And the potential public health upside to a non-hallucinogenic psychoplastogen is massive.
I guess so, purely from a numbers game.
Beyond just the sheer cost and time of guided sessions, there are large populations for whom a massive, heart-pounding psychedelic journey is simply unsafe.
Right, people with heart issues.
Exactly. Individuals with severe cardiovascular conditions or a personal or family history of psychosis, they are currently completely excluded from psilocybin trials.
So a pill would help them.
A non-hallucinogenic pill could open up this vital neuroplastic healing to millions of people who currently cannot access it safely.
I get that. I really do. But it just feels like modern medicine is trying to strip the magic out of the magic mushroom, just to make it fit neatly into our existing healthcare infrastructure.
That is a very common criticism.
I mean, is it really possible to undergo a massive structural renovation of your mind without actually noticing the construction going on? Can you really separate the profound emotional breakthrough of a psychedelic journey from the physical hardware update?
Well, the scientific community is fiercely divided on this right now.
Really?
Oh, yeah. The animal models with rapamycin prove that the biological cascade is strictly necessary for the physical changes. A mouse doesn't need to understand its trauma to grow new dendritic spines.
That's true. The mouse just gets the spines.
But the human evidence tells a much more nuanced story. In clinical trials with actual human patients, researchers consistently find that the subjective depth of the psychedelic experience strongly correlates with long-term therapeutic outcomes.
Oh, so the more profound the mystical or emotional experience during the trip, the more durable the healing is months later.
Exactly. The patients who report the highest levels of emotional breakthrough or conscious confrontation of their trauma are typically the ones who see the greatest reduction in depressive symptoms.
That's fascinating.
So the hallucinogenic experience might not be the biological engine of the neuroplasticity, but it appears to act as the psychological software required to properly format the newly grown hard drive.
I love that analogy.
The deeper scientific question of whether the subjective experience is strictly necessary for human healing or merely complementary to the biology, well, that remains one of the most consequential opened questions in psychiatry today.
Wow. So what does this all mean for you listening? What we are learning from this massive explosion of research is that psilocybin is not merely an escape from reality.
Definitely not.
And it is certainly not a temporary chemical balancing act that you have to maintain with daily dosing for the rest of your life. It is a profound plasticity restoration intervention. It opens a brief, highly critical window where the rigid, calcified neural pathways of trauma, grief, and stubborn addiction can be melted down and literally, physically rebuilt.
It really forces us to completely discard the old notion that the adult brain is a finished, unchangeable concrete structure.
We thought that for so long.
We operated for decades under the assumption that once you reached adulthood, your cognitive architecture was essentially set in stone.
Mm-hmm.
But this science proved that assumption is categorically false.
Completely false.
The adult brain retains an astonishing capacity for rapid structural reorganization.
Just think about why this matters to your own life. Whether you are dealing with rigid behavioral habits or looking to break out of a creative or mental rut, trying to process old grief, or just trying to understand the cutting edge of human performance, this research is incredibly empowering.
It gives a lot of hope.
It means that with the right intervention, you are structurally capable of massive change. The hardware can always be upgraded.
And the brain that emerges from a well-supported neuroplastic window is demonstrably not the same brain that entered it.
Right.
We can now observe that transformation at the level of individual neurons and synapses.
Which leaves us with a truly provocative thought to mull over.
Okay.
If our deepest traumas, our most stubborn daily habits, and our very cognitive identities are physically encoded in the microscopic dendritic spines of our prefrontal cortex.
Right.
And a single compound can cause those physical structures to wildly remold themselves in a single day.
Yeah.
What does that mean for our fundamental concept of self?
That's a huge question.
How much of you is a permanent identity, and how much of you is simply an old map waiting for the right window to be rebuilt?
It challenges the very human tendency to believe we are entirely bound by our past experiences and our current limitations.
So the next time you feel like your mind is a dense forest with paths too deep to ever escape, remember the science. The capacity to sprout entirely new roads isn't just a hopeful metaphor. It is a literal mechanism built right into your biology. You just have to know how to unlock the gate.